D-Mace, Fingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are proudly presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Fingan here with you on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet's NHL insider, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, we started our show today beginning to sift through the wreckage of this disappointing Predators season. I would love your outsider's perspective, so to speak. When you look toward the offseason, what is the biggest question looming over these Predators as they try to get back on track and figure out what happened this season?
So I think one of the things I'm looking at, Adam, is around the trade deadline, Barry Trotz met with a lot of the players and he talked to them. Are you still in? Do you still want to be in? Do you still believe in what we're doing here? And I think the answer was yes. I always think those questions are harder to answer during a season. It's emotional. Compressed, you're focused on your next game, things like that. I think now with a bit more time to sit down and think about it, I the exit meetings happen now. I'm sure Barry Trotz is going to be talking to all those players again. Like Ryan O'Reilly could have been traded. Like he could have been traded to Ottawa, for example. I think he could have been traded to Toronto. I'm sure there were others, New Jersey. But he reiterated very strongly that he wanted to stay, and I wouldn't expect that it would be any different for him. But I do think that he's going to talk to some other guys, Trotz will, and we'll see if anybody feels differently. I think that's one of the questions. Like, this has been such a hard, disappointing year. Do any players feel any differently about the direction of the Predators or how they think things are going to go? So that's number one on my list. I think the other thing we're all going to be wondering is, what changes will be coming. You don't come back from this season with the exact same setup. Coach, other players on the roster. I'm sure ownership will weigh in too. Whenever you have a season like this that is so so disappointing, there's always change. There's always the hard questions being asked. How do we ensure that this doesn't happen again? I do believe that whenever you do as much change as the Predators did last year, this can happen. Stamkos was shocked. I think Marchessault was disappointed. And it can affect how everything goes. But I still think that nobody was expecting this. And I think everything from play down the middle to speed of the team to everything that was tried, Saros, their D is a bit small. How do they get a bit more physical? Some of that was Lauzon being out. Saros is a better goalie than he showed this year. Is it a one-off or how do you fix it? I have no doubt it's already started, but I do think that this is going to be a lot of tough questions being asked internally in the Predators that have been asked already, to be honest.
Are there recent examples of teams that have endured what the Predators endured this season, dealing with significant change in the dressing room, having issues adjusting? Barry Trotz, if I recall correctly, has used the example of the New Jersey Devils last season. Two seasons ago, the Devils were a 100-plus point team, made the playoffs, yep. Won a round, if I recall correctly. Last season, they missed the playoffs. This season, they're back in the playoffs. And, of course, that's what Barry Trotz is hoping to do. I don't know if that's a perfect comparison. But are there recent examples that you can think of teams that went through what the Predators went through, integrating significant new players into the lineup, and then bouncing back maybe the following season?
Ooh, Adam, you should have given me a homework assignment.
I apologize.
No problem. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. You know, off the top of my head, I can't. Off the top of my head, I can't think of one. But the one thing I can think of is there have been examples of teams. Like, I take a look at Winnipeg, which is the number one team in the league this year, and went wire to wire. And one of the things I do believe is that consistency can matter. Okay? Like, that's a team, they had a huge year last year, and they got wiped out in the first round by Colorado. And their fans were hugely disappointed. And they didn't make as many changes as their fans wanted. They kept a lot of their group together, and they're number one in the league this year, and we'll see what happens. I do think that you can't change all the time. And, you know, the one thing, like, you'd have to show me in Nashville's case, Adam, where it would be better or what a path would be better to completely flush it out, change everything, and start again. Unless you really want to go to the bottom of the league and do the long, painful rebuild that, like, Chicago's doing and San Jose's doing there. If your goal is to be better next year and significantly better, you'd have to show me how that would be the better route. Now, I think they're going to have to make some changes. I don't know that you can come back with this same group. Definitely going to have to become a quicker team. But I do think the consistency in this league, if you have good players, it is far better to keep them than it is to get rid of them. I can't give you a specific answer to your question. I'd have to think more of it. But I think the teams that are most successful in this league are the teams that are good that have good players, consistently keep those players, and find ways to support them.
You mentioned what Colorado did to Winnipeg in the playoffs last season. I'm starting to wonder if Colorado might do the same thing to Dallas in the first round of the playoffs. The Stars were here. The Stars were here last night. They lost 5-1. They're winless in 7 consecutive games. Jason Robertson suffered an injury last night. Miro Heiskanen, his status is uncertain. I'm a little worried about the Stars. What do you make of that situation in Dallas?
I think they're worried about them too, Adam. That did not look good for Robertson. We'll probably know more tomorrow, but that really didn't look good. I completely agree with you. I haven't liked them a lot lately. I mean, it's not just the W's or the sort of the L's, but it's the way it's kind of happened. They've lost to not very good teams. They haven't been able to keep momentum in games. Like, you know, they scored early last night, and they just still got pumped by you guys.
First like shift, 16 seconds in.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's not the way. Like, there, Adam, one thing I have done research on lately is, does it matter if you go into the playoffs hot, right? And there are examples of teams who've won the Stanley Cup who have gone into the playoffs cold, and they've still won. There are examples of teams who've gone into the playoffs hot, and they've still won. So, but I'll say this. I don't think there's an example of anybody who's quite gone into the playoffs like this and won. You don't have to be going 15-2 in your last 17 games. If you're 500 or a little under 500, there are examples of teams who won the Stanley Cup despite that. However, nothing that I know of that's quite like this. And, you know, I'll say this too, like, part of it is not only the way they're playing, Adam, it's also who they're going against. Like, that team has been excellent lately. They did a makeover in season. They changed their goaltending. They made themselves stronger down the middle. They're really flying, and they've got a potential emotional lift here of their captain, who hasn't played in 3 years, showing up for the postseason. And you know, I think if we do get a point where Gabriel Landeskog plays, whether it's game one or game three or at any point, like you could see they were kind of trying to throw cold water on it a little bit. That's going to bring the house down on home ice. So I think they have a big challenge in front of them, not only the way they're playing, but the way their opponent is playing.
Elliot, Barry, excuse me, I'm getting my thoughts together here. Barry obviously did a interview with Jared, which he does every week, and he talked. Yeah. And Jared asked questions about, you know, now that you're at the end of the season, obviously, you know, one of the top stories outside of the players not playing well is the head coach, and he, you know, asked Barry, "Hey, listen, what are you basically his job security?" And Barry said, "Listen, I got to go back in, and I got to continue to evaluate. I got to talk to the other coaches, and I got to talk to the players, mainly, you know, your core players, before he decides to make a decision with the head coach." Now, I am sort of leaning on more so, you know, Coach Bruno coming back, because not only, you know, you can fault Coach Bruno, but I think the Barry understands that, you know, he has to take some of the blame in this too, because these are the guys that he went and earmarked and went and got. And ultimately, I know the coach has to coach him and get the best out of him. I get that part. But in making his decision, if the players, if he talks to the players within that locker room, and the majority of those players, including the key guys, if they are a little bit apprehensive of Coach Bruno, would it be better to for Barry to run it back with Coach Bruno, or then be looking to replace him?
I think it was a hard year between the players and the coach. Mm-hmm. Derek, like, you've been around a long time. The players don't have to like the coach, but they have to respect them, and they have to believe that the coach is putting them into position to succeed. I saw it quite a few times this year, where a group of players that were frustrated with the coach and a coach that was frustrated with the group of players. The one thing I did see, and it was a while ago, and it was when they came through Toronto, was they were working together to try to find solutions. Like, there were times this year where both the players and the coach looked at the way the team was playing and they said, we have to make adjustments. And they did both work together to try to fix that. So now, I know that was a while ago, but it was happening. I just think that as the season wore on, you could see the frustration from both sides. I mean, you could tell there were nights Brunette was really frustrated at them, and he made that clear. And you could tell there were times the players were really frustrated, and they made that clear. I think what I believe Trotz thinks, Derek, is that he has to fix some holes on the roster. Mm-hmm. Down the middle, very hard thing to fix. All year long, Trotz was trying to find another center. And he's going to try to do that again this offseason. But there's going to be other teams, like Vancouver, for example, who are also going to be looking for help down the middle. So you're going to be competing with other teams to get those players, and they are hard to find. Maybe you get one in the draft. Now, depending on how high you pick, that'll determine, whether how soon that player is ready. I think that these exit interviews are big. Good GMs, and I think Trotz, even though it wasn't a great year, I think Trotz is a really smart guy. I think he's going to listen to what his players have to say. I think the other thing here that is a factor, guys, though, is we have yet to really find out what kind of owner that your new owner, Jimmy Haslam, is. Like, and that's one thing that I think I was reminded about this week, is that, you know, you guys have a new owner. We don't really know how he runs a sports team, at least not in hockey. And at any point in time, does he weigh in and say, hey, I want some results here. I want some action here. So when it comes to the Predators, it's not only to me about what the players have to say. And I think the biggest question, Derek, is that do the players, after the frustration of the season, and does Brunette, do they feel they can put this all behind them, try to fix the holes, and say, we can come back with a plan next year that works. And the players will buy in, and the coach feels he can teach them. If the answer is yes, then I don't think Barry necessarily has to make that change. But if the answer is no, and he hears that in the meetings with both coaches and players, he's going to have to make that change.
Talking to Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts. By the way, Elliot, you said Jimmy Haslam. It's Bill Haslam, of course, the brothers,
right?
Jimmy is the one that runs the Browns. Bill, the former governor, is with the Preds now. But just a clarification.
Thank you for correcting me, Willie. I get them mixed up. There's too many Haslams.
Yeah, there's more than one, no question. And everybody in Tennessee knows them. So, Elliot, I want to ask you specifically about Jonathan Marchessault, because we were in Las Vegas for the final road game of the season. Everybody, we've just documented the Predators season. That was the first time he had been back to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And it took until game 80 for him to go back there. And Barry Trotz mentioned how he sees maybe some closure, because it was amazing perspective, I think, for a Predator fan to watch that game, because they stopped the game and they didn't just do a little video tribute where the guy waves and says, thank you very much. It stopped the game. It was a standing ovation. He got emotional in the middle of the game. There were, I saw this right. I mean, I'm way up at the top, but they zoomed in a little bit. He had tears in his eyes. He skates out to center. He waves. The game stops for way longer than it normally does. And you could see how revered. I walked out of the building that night, and there were over 100 fans that were waiting specifically, and they were asking me, is Marchessault coming out? Is Marchessault coming? They wanted to wave to him. So this is a guy that made a huge impact on a young franchise. And I'm sure for every Predator fan watching, they were like, we haven't seen that guy enough of the time here, right? And so I think that was an interesting thing to watch unfold. And I'm sure it internally for Jonathan Marchessault, who I thought did a great job after the game, saying, you know what, he's doing the Nashville interview at the end of the game. He said, you know, yes, that was great, but look, I want to win for our fans. I haven't played very well for this team. I thought that was extremely accountable, but I'm curious how they try to bring out the best in him, because he's a different guy. You've watched all these deep playoff runs that they've made, and he's been a huge part of great teams. So when you absorb that and you look ahead, I think that's a big part of, can the team bounce back? Can they bring out the Jonathan Marchessault that was so revered in Las Vegas?
And I think it was a huge adjustment for the beginning of the year. And he was frustrated with the Predators. I think the Predators were frustrated with him. And, you know, I remember when he came through Toronto, Willie, he was really struggling. And you could see the frustration everywhere. And he said, I didn't just sign for 1 year, I signed for five. And, but like the thing is, like, because I live here in Toronto, I only see you guys once a year, it was a good opportunity to catch up. But then there's what happened after. And the sense I really got, and the three of you can tell me if I'm wrong, the sense I really got is that the frustration didn't go away. Like, the season just wasn't good enough, right? So I have no doubt that, at the end of this season, that's one of the conversations that is everyone that they're going to have is, are you, to Marchessault, are you still happy here? Do you feel we can fix this? Do you want to stay and do you want to be a part of it? Like I said, he told me when you guys came through that he signed for 5 years. You know, like, what do you think needs to be better? Like, the thing about Marchessault is he's a really proud guy. Like, this is a guy who didn't arrive in the NHL as a star. He came later, and somebody had to take a chance on him. And on some level, that's never left him, that he still got that chip on. And I like that about him. He still got that chip on his shoulder that he wasn't a blue blood. And but I think that he has definitive ideas on how it needs to work for him and how he needs to play. And I'm sure he's going to discuss that with them, and I'm sure they're going to discuss that with him. I just think that the question for him is, like, one of the things that happened this year is you guys have a lot of guys who do the same role. And maybe we should have seen that, and I'm talking about people like myself, before the season. And how do you fix that? Like, you have Forsberg, you have Stamkos, you have Marchessault, and they're all great players. How do you create something where all of them can work and do the best thing, the best that they can do together? And I would want input from the players, and I would want input from the coaches. Like, what didn't work next year that we can fix next year? Or this year that we can fix next year? And, you know, I think that's going to be critical. And like I said at the top, I think guys like Marchessault are going to be asked, okay, is there any doubt that you want to stay and be part of this? And at this point in time, I've got no reason to think the answer is, no, I don't want to stay here. But I do think they're going to have, I do think after a season like this, tough questions get asked. And you're going to have to look and say, what can't we bring back this year, the next year that we had this year? And I think one of the things we've all kind of wondered is, with those right shots, they have like an embarrassment of riches almost with all those guys. How can you make it work?
Great question, and no doubt that going forward, that'll be something internally to discuss. I mean, it was pretty. Sorry, Elliot. Last night it was pretty cool.
You emotional at the end of the season, Will? You're breaking up.
I would like to say yes, but I just think it was just bad timing on me. It didn't clear the throat. But last night for the starting lineup, they started O'Reilly, Stamkos, and Marchessault, and had all of their kids dressed out in full Predator uniform, standing there for the national anthem, and they did a lap around the rink. That was pretty cool. So I do think I envisioned them as next phase of their life, as dads coaching their kids. I mean, is that something that can help bond them to the market? But we'll have to see. So last thing for you.
You know what? I have to tell you, I'm glad you brought that up, Willie, because, like, when I saw that, that was very interesting to me, because you don't do that if you are angry at those guys. I think that's important. I think that's important. Like, if they were so angry at these guys and wanted to run them out of town or wanted to get them to leave, I don't think you do that, do you?
I think either way. Like, if I'm the player and I'm sitting there going, I want to get out of here, I don't think I'm putting my kids in the full garb, right? So I think it works on both sides. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, unless you've already made an agreement with someone that you're, we're going to do this, and then we're all going to move on, which I guess could always happen. But when I was looking at that, I was kind of like, that's very interesting. I love stuff like that. You know, one of the things that was kind of talked about this week with, I think it was when Logan Couture retired in San Jose, was just about how, to help build the team, they started like inviting kids to practice and stuff like that, right? Bring your kids. Like, not every day, but some days. So you had a feeling that it was home, right? And I think those touches are small things, but they're big things.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, joining us, sponsored by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, great stuff. Enjoy the opening days of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys, take care.
Elliot Freeman joining us on the program. 615-737-1025. We will react to what Elliot Freeman had to say. We'll also take your thoughts on whatever's on your mind. We're open-minded. 615-737-1025. It's time for the fourth annual 615 Open Charity Golf Tournament benefiting Folds of Honor, presented by Gary Force Acura. Cromwell Media and Social Indoor are proud to announce we will be back at Hermitage Golf Course on Thursday, May 29th, to make a difference while having a great time. You can join us and a few guest media members, athletes, and musicians as we raise money for Folds of Honor. Donations will go to provide life-changing scholarships to families of America's fallen or disabled military and first responders. Sign up to play or sponsor at 615open.com. The Mace Vingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. Another great conversation with Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet. He's about to be very, very busy. The Stanley Cup playoffs open on Saturday with two games. Blues at Jets, Avalanche at Stars. But I want to react specifically to Willie's question and Elliot's answer about Jonathan Marchessault, because we talked about Marchessault earlier in the week. We heard Robbie Stanley on the morning show talk about, you know, there are people in the organization who might be not particularly fond of Jonathan Marchessault. And we talked about his personality, and I thought Elliot laid it out well, talking about Marchessault as a player who was given nothing, an undrafted player who broke in with the Tampa Bay Lightning, got an opportunity with the Florida Panthers. He has his breakout season. He's immediately shipped to Vegas in the expansion draft, and he becomes a fabric of that community, one of the greatest Golden Knights players in their short history. And I think your point with Elliot was well articulated, Willie, that Predators fans did not see the Jonathan Marchessault who played such a pivotal role in the ascension of the Golden Knights franchise in his first season with the Predators. A lot of players need to play better. Don't get me wrong. And Elliot laid it out well as well. But Marchessault, I feel like he's a heartbeat of a team. He is an emotional leader. And you need those types of players, and you need those types of players to be on top of their game. And I personally would love to see the Predators find a way to draw that out of Marchessault, the player who scored 40 goals last season, the player who won playoff MVP a couple of years ago. I think that's a key part of all of this.
One of the things that I think Barry Trotz has really excelled in over the course of his career, going back to the very first days of the Predators, and you will hear him refer to this a lot, D-Mace, and that is, we want to create, he said it with Jared yesterday, we want to create a family environment. Mm-hmm. That is what Nashville is about. Because I think Jared was asking about, well, Vegas is, they're glitz and glitter, they've gone all in on everything from day one, it's a unique environment. That was a very good question by Jared.
They are a ruthless organization. That yes. is the word I used to describe them. They are ruthless. They
will do anything.
Yes.
And for the now, right? Mm-hmm. Barry Trotz and the Predators, I think, had to build slowly. It was the tortoise and the hare. David Poy used to use that in the early years. They couldn't build it overnight. And so they wanted to build an environment where it felt like a family. Barry Trotz, I think, even when he's gone to different places, we talked recently to him about Alex Ovechkin as he broke the record. Alex Ovechkin, when Barry Trotz went and joined that organization, was a player with the reputation of great individual player, but can he win? Can he be part of a team that wins? And that was a project that Barry Trotz took, not only on the ice, but off the ice. He wanted to build a relationship. And I think he is going to take a challenge of a guy like Marchessault and say, how do I get this guy and other guys on the team, as they're here more, to feel like this is their spot. This is where their roots are. This is the family. So I would not discount something little like having their sons out there on the ice before the game. I wouldn't be surprised if that was a Barry Trotz part of that discussion. Say, yeah, let's do that. I don't know if that was the players going to the organization or something otherwise. But either way, I think that's the kind of thing. Now, let's get to Andrew Burnett's part of this, right? If he's back, that's where does he have that same ability that Barry Trotz does to connect as a human? You hear anybody talk about Barry Trotz, it's not, hey, Barry Trotz is a brilliant tactician or a brilliant X's and O's guy. He's good at that. Mm-hmm. But the first thing they always say about Barry Trotz, the coach, is we admire that Barry Trotz, yeah, he can be really hard on you, but he cares about you as a person. He wants your family to be happy because he thinks if you're happy and your family's happy, you will play better, the team will be connected, and the team will play better. So I think that is a project that didn't go well this year, but it is something that you don't give up on. And that's where I think a guy like Marchessault, like you said, Adam, is so emotional. If there's that a buy-in and a belief, and it didn't happen, the connection wasn't there this year. But if you can build that connection, you'll probably see a better player.
Bob is in Antioch on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Bob, quickly, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. Where do you see Blankenberg in the future of the defense? Do you see him as I think he's a solid third-line defenseman. Do you think they're looking at him there if they get it like they want it, or do you think he could possibly be a second pair? I'd listen off there.
Thanks, Bob. Willie?
It's a good question. Nick Blankenberg is the ultimate underdog, right? He's been a guy, he's been nominated for the Bill Masterton Trophy for perseverance, et cetera. He's always been told, you're too small, Nick. Good effort, but I don't think you can make it here. And he was like, no, I'm going to make it here. Like, he walked on at your favorite school, University of Michigan. Kind of an unknown guy. And ended up having a great college career. Yeah. And then same thing happened in the NHL. Probably too small to play. And here he is, right? I can honestly tell you, I didn't know Nick Blankenberg was there at the beginning of training camp, right? I was like, Blankenberg, where did we get him? I was like, oh, yeah, he played a little bit in Columbus. Next thing you know, he's one of their better defensemen this year. But I think, as the caller pointed out, if you're penciling him in as your top defense pair, you're probably asking a little too much of him. But I think, to his credit, he played well with Brady Shea. So what options are out there to upgrade the defense? You just mentioned Adam Neil Pionk. One of the guys that might have been a premier free agent on the market is no longer on the market. So I don't think, ideally, Nick Blankenberg is a top four defenseman on a winning team, but you may not have a better option.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, Jared Stillman will join us as we transition into Stillman & Company. Jared, an insightful interview with Barry Trotz yesterday. We'll talk to him about that and more. Coming up next, Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 106.3 The Game. D-Mace Vingan and Darnick, 1025, 106.3 The Game. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Stillman & Company coming up next. But before Stillman & Company, we transition to Stillman & Company. So we bring in the aforementioned Jared Stillman. Jared, we played a couple of cuts from your interview with Barry Trotz yesterday. Another insightful interview with the Predators GM. What was the most revealing response that he gave you yesterday?
I thought the most revealing response was I gave him my theory about how I think he's going to be loyal to the coach. And it sounds like he kind of picked up and ran that right along. And then I asked him afterwards, so are you going to say he's coming back? I did not plan to ask Barry Trotz if the coach was coming back. I figured I'd give him my theory that the Predators are a more loyal organization to coaches traditionally than other NHL organizations are. And that because of that, and because Barry Trotz is a former coach, I figured that he will be loyal to Andrew Burnett. He will keep Andrew Burnett. So I gave him my theory. And when I gave him my theory, he didn't shoot it down or say, well, that's why you're on the radio. He kind of ran with it a little bit, to the point that I heard so much that I thought, yeah, he's definitely keeping the coach. So then I asked him, I said, so can you say right now that he's coming back as coach? And Barry Trotz like, well, hold on now. And I want to kind of talk to the players and do all the exit meetings and talk to everybody before we make any decisions. But it feels like, again, my big takeaway from the conversation with Barry Trotz yesterday was they're probably going to run most of it back from this past year and hope for a different result. And whether or not that's a good idea, that's their business. But it feels like, again, expect to see the same guys this year or next year that you saw last year. Expect to see the same coach behind the bench, the same goalie in net. There'll be some changes here and there, and then it's not, you know, third pair defenseman changes. You know, they'll probably go get a right shot to play with Roman Josi on the top pair, and they'll, you know, try to go and they'll add in, you know, a Michael Misa or whatever as a second line center. But I mean, expect pretty much the same crew next year, and they'll hope for a different outcome.
I know that if it were up to you, you would make a move off of Andrew Burnett because something does have to change. But the question that we were discussing at the beginning of the show is, if you're Barry Trotz and you're making the decision to bring back Andrew Burnett, if you were Barry Trotz, how would you attempt to explain that? Because you will have to sell that to your disgruntled fans whose team is missing the playoffs for the second time in 3 years. So if you were Barry Trotz and you announced that Andrew Burnett was coming back and then were asked why, how would you sell it?
Did we not hear that yesterday in the interview? He thinks Andrew Burnett is a good young coach. He thinks that he's given him a bad hand this past season. He thinks that he probably overestimated, you know, how seamless a transition for older veteran players was going to be into a new organization, a new culture, a new everything else. I mean, I think that he's really laid out for us the reasons that he's going to keep Andrew Burnett. He thinks Andrew Burnett is part of the solution and not part of the problem. And what did Barry say yesterday on the program? He says, everybody's got a share in the blame. Me, the coach, the players. I think that's what he's going to say. I think what's going to happen is they're going to have a press conference next week. They're going to do their exit meetings, and then they're going to hold a press conference next week. It's going to be Burnett and Trotz, and Barry Trotz will get up there and take the blame for this past season and say that Andrew Burnett is part of the solution as a good young coach who has been nominated for the Jack Adams Award multiple times, that went to the playoffs last year, and that he still believes in Andrew Burnett. And that he believes that this team, you know, just got off to a bad start and they were chasing the whole season and that next year will be different. That is my assumption of what he will say and how he will sell this.
Do you think he's approaching this a little bit different than what he approached, how he approached Hines? Because he says some of the same things with John Hines as well. But the difference is he didn't go and get John Hines. John Hines was already there. He went and got Coach Bruno, and not only did he get him, he went and got these players so he can coach them. So do you think he's approaching it a little bit different, knowing that he had more of a hand in all of this than he did the last coach?
I think your question's pretty loaded. I do think that it's different because this is the guy that he hired that he believes in. But at the same time, like, this is just how I feel about Barry Trotz, and I don't know if you guys feel any different. If Barry Trotz didn't think Andrew Burnett could do the job, he would fire him. Like, I don't think this is a, well, I hired him, and so I want to look good, even though it didn't work out, and it's probably not going to work out going forward. I don't want to look bad, so I'm going to keep the coach on just to make myself look bad. I just don't see Barry Trotz being that kind of guy. I don't think he was that as a coach. And I certainly don't think he's that as a general manager. So to answer your question, yes, I think he is going to give more leeway to Burnett, who he hired, than he did to Hines, whom he did not. But I don't think that the true motive inside of Barry
is just to keep him because I hired him.
Right. I don't think Barry Trotz is worried about how it looks.
Jared, I want to commend you for the weekly interviews. I got good insight. Our broadcast got good insight because of your interaction with Barry Trotz, and I like the interaction you guys had at the very end where you said, look, I didn't throw you fastballs down the middle every time you were in here, so this was not an easy year. So what was your takeaway with how he handled your weekly sessions? Because it was obviously a challenging year for everybody in that organization. And you know, he kept going to the post every week with you. So, you know, what's your takeaway from the season with him, that part of it?
Last year, the weekly interviews were fun. Like, I liked Barry Trotz, and I thought that he was incredibly insightful, and then the team got good, and, like, it was fun to sit there at the trade deadline and talk about a team that was winning a bunch of games and, you know, all these extra draft picks and all this cap space and everything else. Like, that was a fun year. This year was obviously the exact opposite. You know, the second weekly interview we did with Barry Trotz after the team started off 0-5, and that was a very uncomfortable conversation where it's like, you know, the stats say nobody ever makes the playoffs after 0-5, and you brought in all these guys, and it looks terrible, and where's the coach in all of this? You know, I kind of braced myself before that conversation of this is going to be uncomfortable. And over the year and a half that we had had Trotz on the air, I hadn't had a lot of uncomfortable conversations with him, but I knew this was going to be uncomfortable. And when at least for me as an interviewer, especially because I, you know, it's the one-on-one interviews as opposed to like a group setting, like how you guys interview people with three people. You know, sometimes I do sit there and say, okay, I'm going to have to hold somebody accountable today. And it's not going to be fun, but it's going to be, you know, and in that interview, and I think this would be how I would describe the course of the season. It went from, it's my job to hold him accountable to, I think I'm playing this guy's therapist right now. Like, instead of, you know, well, hold on, Barry, like, let's not make excuses here. Let's not do this. Let's not do that. I mean, I felt from that first conversation after the 0-5 start on, I felt a lot of the times it was more like, you know, it went from that to, well, it's not that bad, is it? You know, it's a, and I think that was just the level of accountability that I feel like he showed throughout the course of the year. He didn't back away from the questions. He didn't back away from the fans. I mean, he didn't back away from any of it. And I commend him for that because it's easy. You know, Mike Vrabel says this all the time, but, you know, culture is defined by how you do when things are poor, not when things are great. Everybody can live life perfectly when things are great. And I thought that the way Barry Trotz handled himself this year, I think, is a real reflection of the kind of guy he is and hopefully the leader he is for the organization.
What's on the docket today for Stillman and Company, Jared?
So we will start with our conversation with Barry Trotz and where the Predators go from here. And I got to tell you, it makes me a little nervous. We'll get to that next.
You're always nervous.
Exactly.
You're always concerned.
That is your default setting. Nervous, concerned.
Skeptical.
I'm worried.
Exactly.
Skeptical. When Jared is happy, that's when you know something is wrong, probably. But that'll do it for us. Stillman & Company is coming up next as we continue the conversation following the end of the Predator season. We will be back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Jared, take it away.
Be love on your people,
yes. And peace.
Be love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, wonderful Thursday. Now you can say it, Jared. Peace.
Peace.